I am. Hey, I see a whole lot of parents out there smiling because school starts this week. But it's going to be very, very good. And we're starting a brand new series today called Tough Questions. Everywhere out in the world, we have people asking tough questions, but are they asking the church the tough questions? Are they asking the church for wisdom? Are they coming to the church? Are they coming to God to answer these tough questions? And I want to say, please do, because if we can't answer the tough questions that people are asking, then we're not much good. So we're going to tackle some very, very tough questions this series. We're tackling things that are politically incorrect, that people don't like to hear, but we're going to talk about them because we're catalysts and we don't know any better, okay? So we're going to talk about today, I just simply called it Why I Stopped Believing in Evolution. And I'm going to qualify that because when I say evolution, I don't mean what real evolution is. I mean what most people think when they think of evolution, okay? The first lines of the Bible are, "In the beginning, God created." That's basically the first thing that happens in the Bible. First thing we see God doing is creating, okay? The Bible begins with God creating his creation, and the Bible ends with God redeeming his creation. This is the two biggest acts of God in the Bible, creating his creation and redeeming his creation, okay? And if God is not the creator, if he's not the creator of the universe, of the earth, of you and me, of all life, then he has no right to claim lordship over it. If God is not the agent of creation, then he has no sovereignty over us. He's a nice addition that we can choose to add to our lives. But if God is the creator, then he has every right for sovereignty over our lives and sovereignty. So, guys, it's two greatest actions of God in the Bible: creation and redemption. And it's no coincidence that these are the two biggest actions of God that are under attack in our world today. If you think about it, God's command to love your neighbor is not under attack. No one has a problem with that. God's command to forgive your enemies is not under attack. That's not a big deal. What are the two things that are under attack? Saying that God created the world and that salvation is found only through him. Aren't those the two biggest attacks on Christianity today? They are. Because those are the two biggest actions of God and the ones that make the biggest difference. So, guys, it's really too bad that Ben Carson isn't in the presidential race anymore. It really is, because he was confronted by an angry atheist who made the statement that anybody that believed in God and or creationism was a complete and utter idiot. Yeah, I mean, Ben Carson was the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins and was the first to separate conjoined twins. But please tell me what an idiot he is, okay? Well, he said, after listening to this guy for a while, Ben Carson said, "You know what? You win. I believe I came from God, and you believe you came from a monkey, and you've convinced me that you're right." Okay, I love that. I would love 4 years of those kind of one-liners. I really would, but unfortunately, we're stuck with the other guy. So people have been wrestling with this question since time began. Where do we come from? Where did life begin? Well, guys, I was thoroughly schooled in evolution, just like most people my age that came up through public schools and private university. I was thoroughly schooled in the fact that evolution was fact, and abiogenesis, which is life beginning at random, was fact, and that's what everyone believed. And the only people that didn't believe that were wild-eyed, knuckle-dragging Neanderthals who still traveled around in horse-drawn carriages and everything like that. That's what I was taught. Okay, but what I found is something completely different. I love science, and I love God. And my love for science has driven me towards God, and my love for God has driven me towards science. The two are not mutually exclusive, no matter what the world tells you. Okay? So here's the main point that I'm going to talk about today. It's that life is not created. It never has been, it never will be. Life is not created. Life is passed on from one living being to another. It's like a flame, it's like a fire that is passed on from one living being to another. If you look around, every single person in here has an ancestor. Every living thing in this world has an ancestor. And that means, who was the first ancestor? If we go back, who is the first ancestor? Who was the first person to pass life on, the first being to pass life on? Well, according to St. Thomas Aquinas, he has a theory called the prime mover, where he is an uncreated, eternal being that started the first cause, and that goes back to that. But here's a couple things. So the main point is that life is not created. It is imparted. It is passed on from one living being to another. That's the main point that I want you guys to get today. All right? So, but the problem is what most people mean by evolution is not evolution, okay? What most people refer to as evolution is actually abiogenesis. Everybody say abiogenesis. Yeah, that means life originating at random with no active agent. That that a bunch of molecules are floating around in organic soup, and some electricity hit it, and boom, there was life. That's what most people mean by evolution. That is what I walked away from. Okay, what most people believe mean by evolution is not evolution. First of all, we have microevolution. That's variation within species. That's I have black hair. My daughters have red hair. My daughter has blue eyes. I have brown eyes. That is known as microevolution. You have different types of dogs, different types of cats. Variation within a species, that is microevolution, and there is no problem with that. That is not anti the Bible. That's mutation. That's proven. Everything like that. That's okay. But what people try to do, they try to take evidence for microevolution and try to put it for some things that don't exist. For example, macroevolution. That means species becoming other species. That macroevolution is a dog evolving into a cat or a monkey evolving into a human. That's macroevolution, and that is something, unfortunately, we don't have much evidence for. Right? But here's the thing. What most people mean by evolution is actually abiogenesis. This is life originating without a creator. So we have to get our terms right. Okay? We have to get our terms right. Abiogenesis is life originating at random. Evolution is simply change over time. So don't confuse the two. A lot of people confuse the two. Don't confuse them. All right, here are my major problems. I began an intellectual journey, I guess, towards science that really challenged my rock-solid belief in evolution and abiogenesis, okay? The first thing that happened was in the year 1996. I was at my grandfather's funeral. It was a cold February day, St. Matthew's United Methodist Church. At the time, I was at Center College. I was taking advanced biochemistry and molecular biology class. We were thoroughly schooled in the cell and DNA and all that kind of stuff. All right, and all the evidence that we talked about, I had a big test. A couple days later, I was ready, and we were standing there in the church next to my grandfather's body, the casket, as it was about to be pushed into the church, and the family was going to go in. And all of a sudden, it just hit me. Here is a body full of DNA. All structures are present. Heart, brain, liver, skin, veins, arteries, everything. All the parts of life are here. And yet, there's no life. What's going on here? What has departed from my grandfather that is bigger than the sum total of his structures? Do you understand what I'm saying? What has passed away so that all the structures, even all the structures necessary to life are here, there is no life? I didn't have an answer to that question. And so I went back to Center College, and one of my friends was going to be a PhD. He's actually a professor of biochemistry and molecular biology right now. And I asked him, he was an atheist, and I said, you know, I explained to him my dilemma, and I said, so what happened? What was the difference 1 second before my grandfather died and 1 second after he died? What happened? He wasn't shot. He wasn't decapitated. There weren't any structures missing. What was the difference 1 second before my grandfather died and 1 second after my grandfather died? What was the difference? And his answer was this. He said, well, basically, we're bags of chemicals, and when we're all used up, we die. Now, I don't know about you. That doesn't sound very scientific to me. But that continues to be the best answer to that question I've asked every person that's an atheist or that believes that does not believe in God, the sustainer of life. That's the best answer I've ever gotten. That 1 second before my grandfather died and 1 second after my grandfather died, there was just this chemical reaction that didn't happen. Well, guys, the presence of structures doesn't mean life. The presence of structures doesn't mean life. Just because you have all the parts of life does not mean life. Things die all the time that are full of DNA. So there must be something bigger than just structures that means life. The second main problem that happens is, problem number two is the presence of structures doesn't mean they work together as a system. The year was 1956, I believe. Stanley Miller, a grad student, did a famous experiment. Most of you have heard about it, where he put a bunch of chemicals into an organic soup and used spark plugs and sent electric current through it, and all of a sudden spontaneously formed amino acids. I'm sure that you've heard of that experiment. Who's heard of that experiment? Stanley Miller experiment. Okay. Everyone has, basically. Well, first of all, it's been proven that he rigged the experiment, that it's not real, but it continues to be taught as fact. But the second thing, let's just give him the fact that the amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein, can spontaneously generate. Still a major problem. See, I don't know, how many of you all know what this is right here? Anybody know what this is? No, it's not a pull-up bar. It's what you hang clothes up on, okay? This is not for pull-ups, okay? This is what, you know, hang in the doorway and you hang clothes on. That's what it is, okay? Okay, well, this is a very, very simple thing, okay? Well, I'm just going to set this right here. I'm going to set this right here because we're going to do an experiment here. These are all the parts of a clothes hanger, pull-up bar, okay? These are the parts. Got them? We got the parts here. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to set them here on the stage, and we're going to see if they can become this. Right? All the parts are here. All the parts necessary to a pull-up bar are here. But what's the one problem? They're not together. Now, it's going to take more than just, you know that if these stay here, they will be here for the next 2 million years if no one touches them, right? They will be. No, unless someone picks these up and puts them together, they will remain like this. True? Well, not only do they need someone, an active agent, to put it together to make it function, you also need a tool. You need an intelligent person to design a tool to do this. Now, guys, this has four working parts. Four parts in order to become this. And we know that it will never happen without an active agent putting it together. What makes you think that life, a human being, a dog, a cat, capable of thought, movement, learning, emotion, can come together without someone putting them together? I will even give the evolutionists, abiogenists, that molecules can spontaneously generate. I'll even give them that. I don't believe that, but I'll give them that. But who puts it together? That's the question. Guys, this is going to stay the way it is. If you were to take a human cell and poke a hole in the cell membrane and let all the parts come out, Golgi complex, nucleus, mitochondria, all of those things, ribosomes, if you were to have all the parts, what do you think the odds of them spontaneously assembling themselves to a functioning cell? Zero. Guys, the presence of structures does not mean they work together as a system. In 2004, my wife and I were shattered by the death of our son. I started learning a lot about the circulatory system. Circulatory system. 99.9% of my son's circulatory system was intact and working. 99.9%. He had all the capillaries, all the veins, all the arteries. He had an aorta. He had a heart, even though there's a chamber missing. But he had all the 99.9%, and yet life was not possible because one part was not working right. That's how precarious life is. That's how highly organized and systemized life is. Just because all the parts are there does not mean they work together as a system. Let's not buy that lie. Problem number three with abiogenesis evolution. How did information originate without a communicator? Okay? I was on the beach a couple weeks ago. It was great. I was going on a run down in Hilton Head, my favorite beach in the world. I was running along in the early morning. And I came across a writing in the sand, and it said this. It said, John and Sarah, with the heart, with an arrow through it, July 27th, 2000. Okay. That's what was on the beat. That was written in the sand. Now, let us, as scientists, try to figure out what was going on. The first assumption we can make is that there were two people, one named John, and I would assume he's the male of the species, but in this day and age, you can't assume too much, okay? Okay, we can assume that there was one person named John who was most likely the male of the species, and there was another person named Sarah who was most likely the female of the species, but like I said, you can't assume too much. All right? We can further deduce that with our scientific reasoning, that at some point prior to July 27, 2000, the two of them met and became friends or fell in love or something like that, and they either started dating or they got married. And we can further deduce that that relationship is still going on because I don't know many exes that put hearts with arrows through them celebrating a date, okay? I don't see that. So that's what we can deduce from seeing John and Sarah July 27, 2000. I'm assuming there was a couple having their 16th anniversary. Well, so in other words, there was a system of letters universally agreed upon that were constructed in an intelligent way to communicate information. That's what we saw, an alphabet. All right, we see that. Problem number three, how did information originate? That has been put together intelligently using an alphabet to form coherent information, right? Well, how did that information originate without a communicator? Within your cells, there are over 2 billion specific instructions telling you what you're going to look like, your skin color, your hair color, your height, your race, your ethnicity, how your heart's going to form, your legs, your arms, everything like that. 2 billion specific instructions using a four-letter alphabet, A, C, T, and G. They're known as bases. Where did the information come from without a communicator? Now, are we to assume, going back to the beach, that the waves and the wind hitting the shore were able to form alphabetized, coherent information? Are we to assume that? Well, no, we know that's not going to happen. We know that that's not true. It took an intelligent person using an intelligent alphabet to create instructions, communicate information. The same is true. There's information within your cells. Where did it come from? These questions I have not been able to find answers to outside of creationism, outside of a belief in an agent and a creator. Okay? In his book, The Language of God, Human Genome Project leader Francis Collins puts forth evidence for God in this way. He says, if there's information, there must be a communicator. We have information in ourselves, therefore there's a communicator. Okay? Francis Collins, one of the most brilliant scientists now, Human Genome Project, he put it all together, is a believer in God. All right, so, and the fourth one, I'm going to try to keep this PG, okay, because I understand we have children in the room, but it has to be talked about. Problem number four, how did sexual reproduction evolve? If you look at Darwin's thing that random mutations and everything like that, beneficial to the species are passed on, how did sexual reproduction evolve? Why are there structures in the male of the species that have absolutely no benefit to them unless coupled with the female of the species and vice versa? How did it all come together? There is absolutely no benefit to the female of having female reproductive organs if there's not a male. And the same thing is true of the male and the female, of both. How did that evolve? How was that put together? If a guy is evolving, what evolutionary advantage does it have to have structures that do not benefit it without a female? How did sexual reproduction evolve? How did the mechanisms evolve? How did they work? And you guys, I'm keeping it PG, but I invite you to investigate this. Using Darwin's theory of evolution, using abiogenesis, how did the structures work? How do they form? No one has been able to answer me those questions. They just said it was blind luck. And what I tell my atheist friends that whenever we talk about this, I said, your belief system takes a lot more faith than mine does. I just don't have enough faith to be an atheist, guys. I don't have enough faith in random forces. I don't have enough faith in unstructured chaos becoming ordered. I don't have that kind of faith. Those guys out there, they got a lot of faith to believe what's being taught in schools today. This is why I walked away from evolution, abiogenesis. Not because I want to deny the facts, but because I'm seeking the facts. And every scientific question that I ask led me straight to the Creator. But so why, in face of all of these unanswerable questions and having to deny all the logic in front of us, why is abiogenesis and evolution so popular? Let me attempt that right there. Because in Genesis 3, verse 4, the serpent, when Eve was being tempted by the serpent, said this: "You will not certainly die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." The fundamental temptation of humanity is we want to be God. We want to call the shots. We want to be in charge. We want to be the masters of our own fate. We want to be the one, the top, the pinnacle. That is the primary fundamental temptation facing us every single day. And without God, where does the theory of evolution put humanity? At the top. If God did not create us, then who do we answer to? No one. We determine right and wrong. We determine good and evil. We determine our lives. And that, guys, that is what is so appealing to humanity, to us and our fallen nature. Remember Romans 8, 6 through 7 says this: "The mind governed by flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so." There's a part of you and a part of me that will never, ever, ever submit to God. It's rebellious, it's defiant, and we do not want anything to God. And if you don't think that you have that in you, you're not very self-aware. Every one of us does. And the theory of evolution, theory of abiogenesis, taps into that rebelliousness and says we can deny all of the evidence. We can believe that things create themselves. We can believe in random forces creating something as complex as life so that we can be on the top and not have to answer to God. That's what I believe. That's my belief. That's why it's so popular. Because we know at the end of the day we're left with one of two things. Either we created ourselves, or God created us, and we know that things don't create themselves. At the end of the day, we're left with only two options. I'm going to say that one more time. Either we created ourselves, or God created us. And we know things don't create themselves. Guys, that's why this is such a life and death issue. If God is not the creator, he has no right to have any type of sovereignty over us. But if he is the creator, he has every right to be sovereign over us. And the question is, where does the evidence lead you? My love for science led me to God. My love for God led me to science. The two do not have to be opposed. I invite you to ask questions like this. I invite you to ask questions like, how do systems evolve? How did sexual reproduction evolve? And just because the structures are there, it doesn't mean that that life is possible. When I was at Summer in the Sun last year, I walked over here and I said, I didn't trip though. Over here, let's say that this is T equals zero. This is the beginning of time, whether it's 6,000 years ago, millions of years ago, it doesn't matter. I don't know. I wasn't there. But let's say this is when it all began, and this is a whole bunch of primordial soup, and there's no life, just a bunch of elements floating around. And all the way over here, this is 2016, and we have human life, and we have, you know, all everything. You see the timeline of existence. I invite you to ask an atheist or an abiogenesis, where in this big, vast timeline did life happen? Was it here? Was it here? Was it here? Where is it in the timeline where life entered the world? Because there was a beginning part. And I would ask this question: what happened 1 second before life entered? What combination of chemicals? What explosion? What happened in this second before life was there that caused life? What is it? You know, be ready for a blank stare, because no one knows. And yet we're being told that this is fact. I invite you to ask these tough questions. Ask, probe. Ask, it's okay, but where in this vast timeline did life enter, and what happened to cause it? The Bible tells us that that God created life ex nihilo, out of nothing God created. That's all I know. So I invite your questions, invite your probing. Guys, these are tough questions that the people around us are asking. Parents, your children are being taught differently than what we talked about today. Make sure that you're telling them to ask the tough questions of their teachers, of their students, because these are questions that no one has an answer for and will lead them straight back to God. Why is abiogenesis so popular? Because we all want to be God. It appeals to a rebellious nature. Guys, I hope that this was helpful in this. When I was standing there, I'm going to take you back to 1996, and I'm going to close and invite the band to come on back up. And I was standing there looking at my grandfather's dead body and realizing there are 75 trillion cells full of 6 feet of DNA in each cell. And yet it wasn't. That DNA was not alive, he was not alive. It really shook me to the core. And I want to tell you this, you are greater than the sum total of your parts. You are not simply a blob of protoplasm. You are not one of the lucky ones to make it off the top of the pond. You are not a cosmic accident. You have been made in the image of God. And he spent time on you. You were made in the image of God. We bear his image. Maybe it's time we start thinking about that. Maybe it's time that we begin respecting that. Maybe it's time we begin thanking him for that. Maybe it's time we begin realizing that out of all of the life in this world, he gave you his image. And if that doesn't bring you back to worship, I don't know what will. So I want to invite you, as we praise a creator who gave us his image, I invite you to stand and join hearts together as we sing praise.